heartbreak for basketball, spring camp intel, and baseball's big test this weekend. What's up, Dawn Nation? I'm Jesse. That's Michael. We're the guys from Plant the Spear coming to you with another episode. And Michael, we got a lot of things to talk about today, and we're going to open up with some basketball talk, man. Exciting times in the ACC tournament. Florida State took Duke to the wire, almost hit the buzzer beater. Your boy was in attendance for that one. I was getting ready to storm the court. Probably would have had to get bailed out afterwards because there was a lot of security there. I don't think you do that at ACC or conference tournaments, but I would have been the first. So, man, just a lot of exciting stuff there. Some of the credentialed media outlets are putting out some tea leaves from spring camp intel, so we're going to talk about that today as well. And then baseball, can they bounce back after that tough loss at Florida? Big test on the road this weekend against Wake Forest. We're going to dive into that too. We also got a little bit of softball talk to add on to the end. But, man, overall, busy time for the spring sports for Florida State, and hopefully this isn't the last time we see this basketball team play. Maybe there's some other tournament in their future. But man, a lot of spring sports to talk about today. So glad to be back on the mic with you, man. And how are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for having me again. Yeah, I mean, we were all kind of just doing our little superstition stuff as the game was going on yesterday, watching Florida State play Duke. And I'm just really proud of those guys. I know we're going to talk about that. And of course, yeah, like with pads being on today for football, interested to see what some of the credentialed medias are saying there. And with baseball, man, it's kind of, you know, it's the old saying, it's getting late early. And we need to start seeing something from them. So excited to get into the show and talk about all that.
Yeah, so let's jump right in, man. Let's start with basketball. So last night, Florida State took Duke to the wire, 80-79. Of course, they did beat Cal early on, and I was there for this. This is, you know, admittedly, this was my second and third ever college basketball game. The only college basketball game I ever went to was like a JUCO basketball game 20 years ago. So it was exciting for me to be there. I got to see a win, and they really, I thought we were going to do something, right? Because they dominated Cal. I mean, that game, they made it close late, but they really just dominated that game. And so you were like, man, Duke's down a couple starters. This team's playing as hot as any team in the country. I think we might have something for the Blue Devils tomorrow night. And so, you know, back, man, it was exciting for me because I had some great seats. I found a steal of a ticket to be front row for this game. And I thought I was going to get the buzzer beater of a lifetime. Like, we were talking about it before the show. If they would have hit that to upset number one, that would have been like when we stormed the field at Alabama or in Doak against Alabama. That would have been an amazing moment. But, you know, unfortunately, it didn't happen that way. The shot went a little bit south and missed there, and we'll get into the game. But I think overall, when you talk about it, just the fact that when you talk about a basketball team that frankly wasn't supposed to be in that position, right? They were picked last to finish in the ACC at one point in early in the season. Well, not even really early in the season, about mid-January. I didn't think we were going to even make the ACC tournament after an 0-5 start. I thought we were in trouble. And so when you look at this team, man, to what they've done over the course of this season to push Duke to the wire. And I don't care if Duke was down two starters or not. I know they were people, you know, of course, if Florida State would have won, it'd have been like, well, Duke was shorthanded. But, you know, Duke basketball is kind of like Georgia or Alabama football, right? You take one four-star out to put another four-star in. Florida State doesn't have that, right? They have some of the – probably one of the smaller NIL budgets, not only in the ACC but in the country from a power force perspective because we're a football school. And so for them to go up against a juggernaut like Duke that probably spends, what, 10 times the NIL that Florida State does, to go toe-to-toe with them and take them to the wire and almost be able to knock them off in a tournament setting, man, that's just huge for this program. And, you know, we'll talk about the game. We'll talk about some of the things with this basketball team. But I just think the overall message that it sent was that Florida State looked as competitive as any team in Charlotte. Like, I watched, I stayed for the second game and watched UNC Clemson. Florida State looked better than UNC did against Clemson. Yep. I know that game came down to the wire too, but Clemson was blowing them out for most of the game. Yeah. Florida State, I think if they'd have drawn North Carolina, they would have advanced. I mean, this team was playing really hot, and they just came up, you know, 6 inches short on a shot that didn't sink.
Yeah. I mean, I was just really proud of the way they held themselves in the game. The game never got too out of a hand. They led, you know, a lot of the game. Obviously, they went in the half up 1 point, 44-43. I love the fight that they had. They came out in the second half. Even when I think the lead had gotten to like 5 or 6, and you thought, okay, well, this is where Duke pulls away. I remember texting you saying, well, I think that's about it. And next, you know, they go on a run, they get it back, they get a chance to win the game. You can't be but nothing but proud of this team. The only thing you lament, Jesse, is gosh, if that early, you know, December, January, if they could have gone back, you know, and get that UMass loss back, could get that Miami loss back. There's a couple other losses there that you think if they get those losses back, it didn't matter if they won against Duke. They'd be in the tournament. We'd be seeing more of them. But what you saw was a team that came together. They were the hottest team in the country. You know, regardless of if Duke had somebody out, you know, it's supposed to be that the that Duke's backups would start for Florida State. And yet Florida State took them to the wire, literally last shot. And they could have won if that shot goes in. But, you know, really proud of those guys. Excited to see what Luke can build on in year two.
Yeah, and I think that's the overall narrative that you got to take with this team is just proud of them, right? Because they were up against it, man. Luke was hired late into the cycle, really kind of just had to throw something together from the portal with not a lot of budget and things like that. And to do what they've done over the course of the end of the season, you know, the early season was looking pretty shaky there for a minute. But, you know, then you come in and I think you're 10 of 12 in your last 12 games before this Duke matchup. You know, you look at some of the losses, were very ugly early in the season, but this is still a team that they lost by 1 point to Wake Forest. Like, that's a game that easily could have went the other way. They had Virginia beat. You know, you lost by 1 point to Duke. You lost by 2 points to Florida. You lost by 3 points to Virginia. You lost by 4 points to Duke this season. And those are all top 10 teams. So, like, they showed that they belong on the national stage. You know, you also beat a really good Miami team, a Clemson team that's probably – both of those are going to be in the tournament. Stanford and SMU, that's probably going to be in the tournament. You beat some tournament teams. So, you know, the fun part about it is you're raising the expectations for the future of this program because, again, we talked about this before – you know, with that top 10 class coming in, you got some real pieces. And if you can get some of those freshmen to really elevate their play early, and then you go to the portal and you do some things there, you get just a couple of pieces to accent that, to have some veterans, and you bring back some of the guys that were on this team. I mean, you know, again, we talked about this before. The expectations are going to be to make the tournament. I mean, this team is, is they're turning it around, and it's really exciting to not only have a program that's getting back to winning, but I think it's probably too early to say that Luke Laux is a home run hire, right? Because you got to actually, you know, win meaningful things to say that. But so far, I could not be happier with the hire than what they've done with Luke Laux. Because, you know, just watching like over the course of the season and how he like shouts out Seminole Sound for being there. You know, the thing where they did the replays with the guys on the bench. Like, you can tell that he loves Florida State. This program means a lot to him, being from Florida State, being an alum and all that stuff. Like, it's like seeing it's like when Edo won the national championship at LSU, right? Like, it's that hometown guy that it really means something to him. And so not only is the success coming, but having it from a guy that's easy to cheer for and easy to love and young and energetic, like, man, it's just really proud of them. So, just to touch back on the game and then to bring it back to full picture, and then we'll wrap basketball up here. Obviously, as we said, Florida State loses the heartbreaker 80-79 on a last-second missed shot by Robert McCray. You know, as you pointed out, they led 44-43 at halftime. They were able to push ahead by 8 with 13 minutes left. And, man, I was like, I think we might run away from Duke at one point. But then, unfortunately, you get outscored 19-2 over a five-minute stretch towards the end of the game. And it just kind of put it out of reach for you. You know, really what killed you in this game was you just got beat up on the boards, man. They had 46 rebounds to 25, which was just – it's the difference in the game, right? Second chance points, 24-7, 22 points off rebounds to 6. Like, that's really what killed you. You had some crucial missed free throws in the second half. The opportunities were obviously there, right? It's just you need some things for this team to get taken care of, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But, you know, again, you went toe-to-toe with Duke, and you held right there with them, and you had a chance to win the game late. And I know people are – I think the big talking point right now, should Florida State have called a timeout with that on that last possession? And, you know, to your point, we talked about this before the show, you can argue both ways, right? And I'll let you make that argument in a second. But to me, when you look at it from the perspective of the only complaint I have with that shot is you were down by one and you attempted a three for, you know, Robert McCray, who, let's face it, he had not been hot from the three-point line that night. Anyway, looking here, he was two of eight from three. So, like, yes, Robert McCray was the guy that you wanted to have the ball in his hands because he's been your offensive engine. He's been your leader. He had 30 points last night or the night before against Cal. He's the guy you wanted with the ball in his hands on the last shot. But being down one, I didn't think you needed to take a low percentage three. You could have driven to the basket, tried to draw the foul, tried to get a more high percentage shot, or LaJay Jones was standing wide open at the top of the key right next to you, and he was 4 of 8 for three that night. Right. Chauncey Wiggins was 3 of 4 from three. So, like, he was not your strongest three-point shooter, and he took a low percentage game-winning shot. But, again, you had an opportunity. You had time to advance the ball down the court. You had time to get a clean look and take a shot, and it just missed. Like, a timeout's not going to make a missed shot go in.
Right.
But to your point, there's different aspects of that. But that's really been the biggest talking point in the game, you know, and I'll throw it back to you. But I'm not going to nitpick over that type of stuff. Right. I mean, again, you took the number one team in the country down to the wire and had a chance to upset them at the last minute. But, you know, people are going to make a to-do about some things, but you still got a shot with the guy you wanted with the ball in his hand.
Right. Well, and the thing is, like, there's always two theories to this, especially with 10 seconds or left. You know, one theory is call a timeout when you get over half court on your side of the basket. So what you can do is set up a kind of 2-for-1 shot, meaning it's either going to be a drive to the basket or a kick out for a three, right? Depending on what you need. A lot of times it's drive to the basket. These refs are not, most of the time, 8 out of 10 times, they're going to swallow their whistle and not make a call, right?
Yeah, so you're probably not getting that call against Duke in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Exactly. Especially. Thank you. So it's a drive to the basket. If it's not there, if the layup is not clearly there, then you're going to kick it out. That's one good reason for a timeout. Another, the other side of it, though, that I've heard other coaches talk about is that you don't want to give time for the defense to set something up. So usually when you get that ball out of, whether it's a rebound or you get it from out of the basket, the defense has to just get in their, especially 10 seconds or under, they have to get in their base defense, which usually is typically going to be a man-to-man defense. Sometimes they'll go straight to a zone. It just depends on what they're trying to do. But if you call a timeout, well, then the defense can set up a trap. They could set up a half, you know, you pass the ball. They make it, especially because Florida State, as you said, Jesse, has struggled a lot to get the ball in and had struggled a lot to get the ball in that game. So you wanted the defense to be on their heels there. So I understand why Luke Louse didn't call the timeout there. But the thing about it was, like you said, McCray was 2 for 8, and next to him was standing
LaJay Jones. Name?
LaJay Jones, who was 4 for 8. So he had a better percentage of that night than McCray did. And he was standing wide open. So if you're McCray and the guy, you know, the shot wasn't a bad shot. It wasn't bad. He was open, but he wasn't as open as LaJay Jones was. And so that would have probably been the better shot, but you gave yourself a chance. The ball just literally hits on the outside of the, on the inside outside of the rim, and it bounces off. And, you know, man, gosh, if that had gone in.
I know. It was so close. And, hey, it looked better than North Carolina's last attempt, which, oddly enough, the game ended with the same exact score that we had. That was just a wet noodle towards the rim. But, again, man, I mean, you're talking about – keep in mind, this is a Duke team that, even being down a couple of guys, they blew out NC State recently. They blew out North Carolina just last week, I think it was. And now you took them down to a 1-point game. So, like, it's just, it's really impressive what they were able to do. And again, I think they proved that not only does Florida State belong back in the picture now that you have Luke Louse at the helm, especially when he can really get some talent in here, but you also show that the future's bright, because this is going to help, man. You know, year one, especially the way things started under Louse, was kind of like, okay, how do we garner excitement? How do we get these NIL donations to be able to compete with these big programs? Because he talked about in his introductory press conference, he's like, listen, I understand that we can't compete with Duke and North Carolina for an athlete, right? We have to go try and get guys out of Florida, guys who are underrated, under the radar guys and stuff like that. But he also said, just because we're a football school doesn't mean we're not going to have expectations for the basketball program. And so what this does, because, you know, when you first started there at one point in mid-January, you were 7-11 and 0-5 in ACC play. But the way you finished and what you were able to do down the stretch, the confidence and the enthusiasm that you built among the fan base, it's only going to help with your NIL, and it's only going to help you get better with time. So that's really exciting just for the direction of this program, because I would love to see Florida State basketball get back, you know, to be good again. Like, I understand we're a football school, so it's not ever going to probably be what North Carolina and Duke are,
right.
But it doesn't mean you can't have some fun with basketball, right? You can't be really competitive. And that's what I think we're going to see under Luke Laux going forward. And really that starts next year when you get that class in. I mean, number 8 class in the country per 247. And we've talked about this. I mean, you got a couple top 100 recruits in there, so I don't want to repeat ourselves. But one of the biggest recruits in that class that's going to be an immediate impact is Marcus Ponder. Because, you know, we just talked about you got killed on the boards against Duke, 46-25. Alex Steen has been really good for you. He was a gem that you found from the lower level, but he's not really a true big, right? And watching that North Carolina game after that with their 7-footer in the middle, I mean, now he's lanky. He's real small. He's like 7'2", 225. But, man, he was a presence in the paint all night for North Carolina. He was their leading scorer. And so you need that kind of presence inside. And Marcus Ponder at 6'11", 328, he can be that type of guy if he can come in and be ready to compete as a freshman. So, you know, it stinks that you're going to lose your top guys like LeJay Jones and Robert McCray and some of these guys that really led your team this year, and Chauncey Wiggins. But again, you return a lot. Summersville could come back. You got a lot of these guys that could come back for your team. Bassong can come back. And then you mix them in with a really good high school class that's got some pieces that you need.
Yeah.
Next year is really exciting. So, man, I'm just proud of this team. I hope this isn't the last time we get to see them play. I hope they either get an invite to maybe the NIT right now, the way they're playing. And I feel like they deserve to be in March, right, with just the way they're playing right now. Unfortunately, the way they kind of stepped on their toes early in the season is probably going to keep them out. I mean, UMass did beat Miami of Ohio yesterday, so that makes that loss look a little bit better. But you're not in a position to get in the tournament right now. You knew you had to win basically the ACC tournament to get in. But as one of the hottest teams in the country, it would be nice to see. They're better, to Luke Laux's point that he said after the Cal game. I don't think there's 25 teams that are playing better than Florida State right now. There sure enough isn't 64 of them. So I think Florida State could make some noise in there if they were allowed to get in. But, you know, the unfortunate part is, and this is something that you told me like a week ago, and it really does ring home kind of the unfortunate part of sports, right, is this team is so hot right now that you really hate to see their season come to an end. But as you said before, there's only 3 teams in the country that end the season on a win. So it doesn't matter how magical you feel. Unless you're one of those 3 teams, you're going to end on a loss.
That's
But I think at the end of the day, I just don't want to see this basketball team stop playing. And, you know, to wrap up basketball, man, I had a great time at the tournament. It was really fun. There wasn't a whole lot of FSU fans on night 2. Night 1 was pretty good. Night 2, there was I maybe saw 10 of us. Actually, Cimarron came by when they did a mascot thing at for those of you that don't know, Cimarron is the horse mascot that travels with the non-football team. And he came by, and it's just like me in a sea of blue in the front row there. And he just starts chopping. He points at me, starts chopping, decides to chop him back. And we do a high five. We're like, hey, we got to stick together because there ain't many of us in here. But, man, it was fun. It was loud. The bands are cool. I'm hooked now. So it was good time. So we'll have to make it to the next one next year. So and hopefully Florida State makes some noise in that. So, man, just proud of the basketball team. And unfortunately, they fall short. But hopefully they can find their way into one of these postseason tournaments and make some noise. Now, we're going to move on to a little bit of football talk. But before we do that, I want to bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Look, these guys got great gear. You can support the basketball team, the baseball team. I have my Florida State basketball shirt that I got from Alumni Hall on for the Cal win on Wednesday night. Maybe I should have worn it back for Friday or Thursday night. Maybe that's my fault. Game's on me. I'll take the responsibility. But, man, they got great stuff. So make sure you check them out. If you're in Tallahassee, 1415 Timber Lane Road is the location, or you can shop online at alumnihall.com. Make sure that you save 10% with code SPEAR. You can use that in store or online. They got free shipping over $99. So make sure you take advantage of the sales and the discount and get you some new Noel gear. So we appreciate you guys supporting them and for them supporting us. That's Alumni Hall FSU. Save 10% with Coach Spear. Now, Michael, let's talk about football. I know this is the thing everybody wants to hear about, but, you know, basketball, man, they just is fresh on the brain, and it was such a big game last night. We had to open with that. And, frankly, there's just not a lot to go on with football right now. Right. It's mostly whispers out of camp from the credentialed media that have their sources inside the building that can leak some information here and there. Obviously, when you're watching this, we're recording this today on Friday the 13th. And it is actually was their first padded practice. So not only is camp closed, there's also not a whole lot you can take from running around in lids, right? You need to see full pads. You need to see them going full speed. So there's not a whole lot to talk about right now, but just some of the things that we're going to go off of that they've reported from their sources. Again, in fairness, I want to give them credit. This is from, you know, the credentialed media that have their sources. We don't have the sources. So if it's wrong, blame them. But you know, the thing is right now, man, the hard part about anything that you do with this football program is the same thing that we've been saying for the last month. It all sounds good in front of a microphone. It all sounds good in an article. It has to look good on Saturdays too. 2024 was the biggest, strongest, best offensive line. The receivers were, it wasn't for a short of talent is what Mike Norvell told me at ACC Media Days. I love the way DJU is handling this offense and he's learning and he's ahead of schedule and all that stuff. And then we saw 2-10. None of this stuff really matters right now. Right. It only matters on Saturday. But what we do have to talk about is just some of the overall notes that we've seen so far. And I will start with the first one I've seen is there's a little bit of a different attitude about this team, right? They're more in the culture is a little bit more bought in than it was maybe the last couple years. You know, it's hard to build a culture too when you bring in so many through the transfer portal. But the good thing about that too, I think, and this is something that doesn't get talked about a lot, is, you know, people say like when you're starting over every year, it's hard to build culture that way. And it is. But the good thing about bringing in so many transfers is what happened last year doesn't matter to them. You know, right. It was always funny when like people would talk to Tommy or whatever last year and they'd be like, you know, coming off 2-10. And it's like, Tommy wasn't here for that. Tommy added to the That's 10, right. That's not right. the two. So like we, you know what I mean? And so I think you do get that fresh perspective. Right. And so it's good to see. What it means on Saturdays, I don't know, but they're talking about these guys. They embrace the work and they're at the facility all the time. And you're having some vocal leaders step up. Daniel Lyons being one of those is a really good thing to hear because he's going to be a big part of this defense this right. year. They said that he's embraced the challenge of knowing he now has to step into Daryl Jackson's shoes and be that presence in the middle of the defensive line. So that's good. I heard some good things about Chris Jones, Makai Bayer, and Ashlyn Barker and KJ Kirkland are some guys who are basically always in the facility, always working, taking that next step, stepping up, being vocal leaders. And, you know, those are a couple of the big things that you want to see culture-wise because, again, I don't know how much it's going to play on Saturdays, but 22 had culture. 23 had – the 22's culture led to 23, all those players coming back. 24, we know was a problem. We know that team didn't have leaders. 25, you had Tommy trying to be a leader. But if you can have a good culture, it does make a difference, right? It's not going to make you bigger, stronger, and faster, but everybody pulling in the right direction does make a big difference. And so it's at least good to hear, even if it is just talk this early in the camp, that the culture seems to at least be going back in the right direction. Because at this point, with Mike Norvell and all the mess that's kind of been made of this program, that was one of the things that you kind of felt was going to be hard to reestablish.
Yeah, you know, I think too with again, it's frustrating because it's just so early to really know exactly what you need to be looking for. And everyone's just going to be reporting on, you know, it looks different. It feels different. Okay, sure. Yep. But, you know, these are the same things they said last year. It looks different. It feels different. Yep. Mike is more free to be able to do this. He's everywhere and he's more demanding than ever before. And then 5-7, like, so for me, it's just more of like, okay, yeah, like, It's really hard to grasp exactly what it is that has changed from last year to this year and what is going to change from spring to summer. But if the culture is getting better, if it feels different, that's great. That's awesome. But can we see it actually materialize when the games matter, when the lights come on, when the scoreboard comes on? Can that actually show up then? Because it's one thing for it to show up in practice and in spring, but it hasn't been showing up when it actually matters.
No, you're exactly right. And that's why we say, like, all of this stuff sounds great in front of a microphone. All of this stuff sounds great in an article and everyone's, you know, excited and it looks different this time, but it looked different this time for 2-10. It looked different this time for 5-7. It looked different this time and we don't know what it's going to be. So we need to see it on Saturdays more than anything, but you know, it's all we have to go on right now. So we just have to take it with a grain of salt and you know, I think most FSU fans are at least at the point now where we know to take everything with that grain of salt, right?
Yep.
Like you talked last episode about giving us the sugar to make the medicine go down. I think now with anything, you got to take that grain of salt too, to be like, okay, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to be like a bug to a bug zapper when the season gets closer. I'm coming back. I know it. I'm going to be excited because it's Florida State football and I'm always excited. Right. But I'm not going to buy in like I did in 2024 thinking we're going to win 10, 11 games based on what I heard at a microphone. Not what I see on Saturdays. I need to see it first, right? Let's see what we see against New Mexico State and SMU. Let's see if fall camps open at all so we can see it. Now, some of the other things that we can talk about that have been reported by practice is running back Trey Wisner apparently is that dude. He is a real one.
Yeah.
And that's exciting because, you know, I talked a lot about in the offseason, the guy was 1,000-yard back on a playoff team in 2024. He still was injured and put up almost 600 yards last year. Like, I think this guy can be a real weapon for you. And so I'm really excited about what Trey Wisner can do. The concerning part is what we've heard about quarterbacks so far is that it kind of seems like both are on the same footing, Sperry and Daniels, as we know, because Malachi Marshall's out, Jaden O'Neal's out. Well, Malachi Marshall won't be here till the summer. Jaden O'Neal's not here at all this year. So you got the Dean DeNoble kid as well, who's playing, which I saw a clip and someone was like, man, who threw that? And it was that DeNoble kid. I was like, okay. Sean McGuire. That's got the sleeper off the bench here. But you know, what we talked about last episode is how when Mike Norvell in his introductory spring press conference talked a lot about, it sounds to us like Ashton Daniels is the odds on favorite to win this job. It's not a real quarterback competition, but you know, it's very early in camp to start saying things like neither quarterback has separated themselves. But if both of them look on about the same level and this guy's making the throws that a redshirt freshman is making on that same level, you know, this is something that goes back to what we talked about with the offense when Gus retired and Mike Norvell took over play calling, is the problem with the way they've approached quarterback is you have made the engine of the car the bottleneck of the offense, right? Like you have a great receiver in Deuce Robinson. You have Mekhi Danzy. You have Javon Boggs. You brought in these tight ends. You know, you got Landon Thomas at tight end. You got these great running backs and everything. But the point is to utilize those good skill players, you need a good quarterback. You can't have your quarterback be the bottleneck of the offense. You can't have, you know, it's like going out and buying a brand new Corvette and putting four donut tires on it. Like, the potential's still there, but you can only get so far with what actually makes it go. And so that, to me, is the concerning part about the quarterback position. That's why I think they should have paid up for at least like a – I don't know that I would have spent the money on Calandria, but a Calandria Lagway at least type of caliber of quarterback. Like, I get not paying that price tag for them, but also, you know, going to the Sam's or Costco on the weekend and picking up the bargain bin quarterback 3 years running now, you see the same problems happen over and over again. And these early reports, while I do think Ashton Daniels can be better than people think he can, it is a little bit concerning to, you know, go, okay, well, we got Deuce Robinson, but is he going to be fully utilized with a quarterback position that might not be the greatest for him at Florida State? So that's the one thing that is a little bit nerve-wracking early in camp reports. But again, it's very early and it's a new offense for these guys. So it's going to take some time to get going. So we'll just have to keep an eye on that and see how it progresses.
Okay, this ain't going to make sense until it makes sense, okay?
Fair enough. I'm following.
Okay. In Major League Baseball, a Major League hitter, on average, will hit the ball. They basically have a 154 to 196 hitting percentage, okay? So about 15 to 20% of the time on an 0-2 count will they actually hit the ball. That's low. That's
That's very
so low. That's super low.
That was our offense against Florida last week.
Yes, for sure. So we've gone to the bargain bin quarterback and gone 0-2.
Yep.
And we said, instead of choking up on the bat, instead of changing our stance, instead of maybe looking for a fastball, we said, nah, we waiting for that curveball one more time. Yep. Like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? What are we doing here?
Yeah.
You know, again, and I'm not trying to be negative. It's just that, you know, everybody and their grandma knew that going into the spring game and the spring season that Asher Daniels was the odds on favorite to win the quarterback. It became very clear in Mike's opening press conference that he was the guy to take that. And I think when you're looking at so far what's been coming out, I mean, again, they've only been in spring pads just one time, you know, starting today. But to hear that they're kind of somewhat evenly matched, and yet, you know, Ashton's a guy. Well, of course, Sperry's going to have a leg up because, well, in some, I was about to say Sperry knows the plays, but he knows Gus Malzahn's offense. I read the other day where they interviewed Gabe Fertitta. I think that's how you say his name.
Yeah.
And like he talked about how his job is director of football strategy is to blend Mike Norvell's offense and Gus Malzahn's offense. And so Sperry probably still has a leg up in that way because he knew what they were running with Gus. And now he's going to learn with Mike, and Ashton's learning with Mike. So in that sense, but, you know, I just think it's just so interesting that, you know, it's kind of like what we talked about in the pre-show is like, it's hard to really get on Mike for going poor in high school recruiting with quarterbacks since that is the new wave of things. Almost all the schools, you know, what was the stat? Seven of the eight.
It was like six or seven of the 12 playoff teams in the last transfer. 2 years. Yeah, were transfers.
Yeah, transfer QBs. And so, you know, I think where we do need to get on Mike is, like, okay, fine. Don't recruit well in the high school for quarterbacks. But you are striking it out on Porter quarterbacks with DJU and Tommy, and, you know, literally the only quarterback of success is Jordan Travis. And so, you know, I'll be curious to see how this continues to go. Of course, you know, we're still missing one more quarterback and I want to say Marshall, but it's not Marshall.
Yeah. Malachi Marshall. Yeah.
Malachi Marshall. There it is. I was going to say Nelson. That's right. Malachi Marshall. Because he has a lot more fanfare, a lot more success, but he's coming from a lower division. And he can't get here till the summer. So I'll be curious to see if he can make a dent into this QB race. But it's clear that Ashton is going to win this job no matter what. Sperry could be perfect, but it looks like it's Ashton's job to completely blow.
Yeah, and I think you make a really good point in that you need to kind of pick a direction, right? Like if you're going to not prioritize, or if you're not going to develop high school quarterbacks with a flip and you're just going to take the Miami route, and I'm not saying you got $10 million to go pay Mensa, but like if you're a high school quarterback, I get why you don't sign with Florida State because you're not going to get developed. At Miami, you're not even going to get a chance to get on the field, right? But they're putting so much into the transfers at the quarterback position that, I mean, if they get injured, they're going to be in trouble. But as long as their starter's healthy, they got one of the best quarterbacks in the country 3 years running. Maybe not Carson Beck, but, you know, he's still decent. The problem with us is, like, name the high school quarterback for Miami. Like, you can't even do it. But for us, it's like, okay, you brought in this guy and this guy and this guy, and you didn't develop them. But you're also not really making a splash in the portal either, to your point. So it's like you're not doing well at either. Or I'd rather you just pick a side and put your resources into, like, hey, we're just going to take a veteran transfer every year, or we're just going to roll with the young guys and we're going to go get the best guys we can and we're going to pay up for them. So I think you do need to pick one or the other. That's a very good point and very valid. So again, three practices into spring, first padded practice in a new offense. We'll wait and see how this develops, but it's just one of those where we kind of knew there was a ceiling at the quarterback position coming into the season. And so to hear how it's starting off, it's kind of like, okay, this is probably going to be what we thought it was. And again, that's the bottleneck of your offense, which puts a win ceiling there too. Now, some of the other good things that we have heard come out of camp is Rylan Kennedy is rumored to be very explosive and working at that jack position. He's a guy who was very effective at Texas A&M when he got a chance last year. So, you know, with the thin group that you have at the defensive line, it would be really nice to see him be able to step in and be a starter for you. Kevin Wynn has slimmed down, is carrying the weight well, so it looks like he's in a lot better shape this year. Ashlyn Barker is working at that rover position, which I like because he's got some size for a safety. So I think he could be one that you could almost roll down in the boxes like a de facto linebacker if you had to. It gives you a lot of options there. So, you know, it's early. It's early and it's closed and there's not a whole lot. You know, most of the credentialed outlets right now are reporting on what physical statures look like and things like that. It's all sides. There's no meat and potatoes right now. Well, I guess potatoes aside, but hey, I like sides too. That's pretty much it right now. That's all you can go on. And so we'll just keep our ear to the ground, see what we can find out going out on throughout camp. But we wanted to at least touch on football and some of the things that are coming out right now. At least they are putting the pads on. And so hopefully we should be able to start here because, you know, there's only so much you can tell when you're in shells and running around in shorts and stuff like that. So we'll start to see how things look. But now the last thing I want to talk about in this episode, well, we're going to talk about some softball too, but we're going to talk about baseball now because there's just, again, guys, we're giving you the best football news we can, but there's just not a whole lot to go off of right now this early into a closed spring camp. But we're going to talk about baseball. We're going to talk a little bit about softball before we get out of here. But if you guys are enjoying this episode and this content that we're bringing, if you don't mind dropping a like and subscribe on the channel. Look, it's free. It doesn't sign you up for anything, doesn't cost anything, and it really helps us reach other Noel fans. It really helps us grow this channel and do the things that we're able to do here. We're pushing towards 3,000. It would be really meaningful for us if we could make it there before the season starts. And you guys are a really big part of that. So we really greatly appreciate that. Also on the podcast, you can rate and review. That helps us reach other Noel fans as well. And don't forget about our website, plantthespear.com. We've been putting out articles and stuff there too. So I just want to quickly ask you guys to do that. It would mean the world for us and we greatly appreciate it. So on to baseball, Michael, this has been a roller coaster of a season so far with this baseball team. And I'm not losing hope because I still believe in Link Jarrett, but there are some red flags that keep popping up. And, you know, when they keep popping up, it's not so much a red flag that's, okay, well, they'll get it hammered out. It just eventually becomes who you are. And exactly. So the problem is with this baseball team, and first I want to start this. Was it last year that was the crazy football season or the year before that where like all the upsets were happening? I think it was last year remember, it just felt like 2007 all over again. This is what this baseball season feels like, man. LSU's getting upset left and right. Wake Forest, the team we're about to talk about, the Florida State's playing, just lost to Coastal Carolina in the midweek. There has been so many upsets. So the fact that Florida State is sitting here at 13-3, they're doing pretty good, right? I'm not going to dump on this team yet. But the problem that worries me is you're now 1-3 versus Power 4 teams. And most of your good wins, most of your good stats have come against lower-level competition. Well, in ACC play, I think 50% to 60% of your opponents are ranked. When you get to Omaha, when you get to a regional and a super regional, you're not going to be playing Northern Kentucky. You know what I mean? You might play the Citadel or something like that, but you're not going to be playing in Northern Kentucky. You're not going to be probably playing a James Madison. You're going to be playing the Wakes, the Floridas, the Auburns of the world. And so far, you know, the Auburn game was okay out there in Arlington. Like, you had chances to win that game. It wasn't the greatest, but then against Nebraska, you were completely just non-competitive in that game. Then you come back to Florida this week in the midweek. And again, I know it's a midweek and crazy things happen, but they are coming off a loss to High Point. Right. And which I want to say High Point, their club team scored like 56 runs in a game this last weekend, which is unreal. But High Point, they win the series. They almost sweep Florida because Florida got lucky that they walked in a bunch of runs at the end to be able to avoid getting swept. And then you come back and you have 18 strikeouts against midweek arms, and your pitchers did not look that well. Like, they just a lot of inconsistency there. And you know, you could say in an alternate world where it's the midweek pitching. It doesn't matter, right? That's what they're there for. But the problem with it was, this wasn't like Peyton Manca. this is the top line arms out of your bullpen. This was Johnny Abraham. This was Kevin Meeble. This was Stokes. This was the guys that you rely on in these leverage games. And I'm pretty sure what Link was doing was he knows how much that Florida series means. So he was trying to give some of the bigger arms an opportunity because, first off, it's stupid that this is a midweek anyway. Can we move this to a weekend so we can
finally
get,
be a series?
Right. It's got to be a weekend series so we can get good on good. But that was the thing that worried me about that was these were arms that you're going to rely on. And they just were not really that effective in that game. And so now to bring it back to my point, you're 1-3 against Power Four teams. And, you know, Florida was not coming in hot where you were coming in on a 9-game win streak and you lost that. And so now you turn your sights to number 12, Wake Forest, who is 15-2 on the season, 11-0 at home. And you're going to have – this is a tough test, man. This is going to tell us a lot about how this team rebounds right now because I'm not going to expect you to go up to Winston-Salem and sweep Wake. Right. But you need to get the series win. You need to at least get one of the three to feel better about where this baseball team is at, right? Because, again, man, the same red flags just kind of keep popping up with the offensive struggles go away once they face – or come back once they face good pitching. You know, again, 18 strikeouts against Florida's midweek arms. What do you think you're going to see at Wake this weekend? Oof. It's going to be tough, man. And then you got NC State right on the backside of that, who's another ranked program coming to Tallahassee in just a few weeks. So, like, you're going to have to show something at Wake because right now I feel good about Wes Mendez. I feel good about Trey Beard. Bryson Moore's getting better but still a little up and down. I still feel good about Johnny A and those guys in closing short inning scenarios, but man, until we see it consistently against Power Four teams, I'm going to be a little bit worried about the ceiling that this team has. Can they make it a super regional? Can they be an Omaha team? If you're mostly competitive against, if you're racking up small or wins against the smaller programs and struggling against the kind of competition you really need to be beating. And so that's what worries me. I think when you go up to Wake this weekend, man, you really need to win Friday or Saturday. You really need to take advantage of Wes or Trey and get a win. But man, I'm still hopeful with this team, right? They're still 13-3. They still got a lot of winnable games on the schedule and they could turn it around in a heartbeat. But, you know, again, when you start to see some of the red flags keep popping up over and over against the better teams and you know that schedule that's coming, it makes you a little worrisome about the ceiling that this team can reach.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you get out, you start the game, you get out to a 2-0 lead. And then that third is just ridiculous. I mean, three walks and then of course they're just hitting, they score five runs there. And then, you know, your pitching kind of gets to them and shuts them down a little bit there, but then you can't put together anything. You get one hit and then a strikeout. One hit, strikeout. I mean, they had the same total number of hits. I was trying to look for what they were as far as with runners in scoring position. It had to be absolutely atrocious.
That's been something that they have struggled with this whole season
Arlington series in Dallas there. They struggled when they got runners into scoring position. I mean, it was absolutely ridiculous how we could not move them over. And the thing is, you said this earlier, and I just want to rehash it one more time. Again, the thing is, what was coming out of the pen for Florida was 95 and plus arms. That was midweek, guys.
Yeah.
You're going to go into the weekend with 95 plus arms for a series. And if you can't hit good pitching, I mean, Nebraska shut you down. Auburn shut you down after that crazy four run first inning. Like, you have struggled against good pitching. And Jesse, it's like the old saying, if someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. We set this aside as, oh, it's early. Well, it's getting late early now. I think this is who Florida State is, which means Link is going to have to go to the drawing board and figure out how to manufacture runs, how to get points on the board. Because if the bats can't get going, you're going to have to get small ball. I mean, bunting and stealing and getting more. And, you know, they've I believe, if I can remember correctly, they benched Williams because he's just
chasing anything and everything right now.
Anything and everything. I mean, the helicopter swings and everything. So, you know, he's supposed to be your fastest player, your most dynamic player. He was hitting 3-something last season, even though he was hurt. And this year, he just cannot find it. I mean, you know, Lincoln's going to have to really dive deep to figure out what he can do to get this offense going, because the pitching is okay, but it's not going to sustain you if you can't get this offense going.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, right? You went 2-for-8 with runners in scoring position, and I think it was against the Citadel, you went 5-of-31 or something, or Arlington or something like that was 5-of-31. So it's been a struggle all season with that. I mean, you make a great point. What this baseball team really needs to do is they need to get back to a Link Jarrett style of baseball. Like, there's so many positions or so many situations where you just need to get someone on base. You need to advance a runner, and they're trying to take the cover off the ball sometimes. Like, exactly. You got to get back to small ball. And some of the pitches they're chasing are like, dude, it was at your feet. It was in the dirt.
Terrible.
Right. And so you have to play that small ball to take advantage of the runners in scoring position. Again, you had 31 runners in scoring position. I think it was the Citadel that I was talking about here. And you only capitalize on 5 of those. And so that's the tough part. And even then, when you look back at the Michigan win, it was good. Michigan's 9-6 now. So they've kind of fallen off a little bit after they beat Oregon State early. So it's just the little things that worry you. You know, like you said, in that game, the bats were a little bit inconsistent. The pitching was inconsistent. You only threw 51.6% strikes in that game. You had a lot of walks. You had 3 wild pitches. You hit a guy. Like, it's just, it wasn't clean baseball. And when you're playing a team like a ranked Wake, a ranked Georgia Tech, a ranked NC State that's coming up, you got to be perfect, man. You got to play clean baseball. And not playing clean baseball is how you lose these games. But again, you're just now getting into ACC play, so let's give them the benefit of the doubt until they've shown us otherwise. But again, like, if you go up there and you look non-competitive against Wake Forest, then I think I'll be kind of more on your boat, where this might just be who they are, and maybe things didn't come together this year like they were supposed to.
Yep.
But again, it's early, and this team, you know how baseball is, man. You just got to get hot at the right time. And so if you're going to have some struggles and stuff like that, it's best to get it out of the way early. They still got the talent. It's just they're not putting it together as a team right now. And it's time right now, because you don't have any more time to play with, because it's ACC play time. Now, the last thing I want to talk about here is just to give a nod to softball as well. They are currently number 10 in the country. They're rolling. They're 22-4 on the season. They open ACC play this weekend, which is kind of insane to me that you play 26 games before you start conference play. Like,
isn't that wild?
You ought to have everything figured out by the time you get into conference play. So they do open up this weekend against Syracuse. And, you know, man, this team, they got a couple struggles in the circle, right? They got some pitching stuff that they need to figure out. But, man, when you got people in the lineup like Issa Torres, who's hitting 597 right now, went 6-for-6 against Coastal. Can she play baseball? Can we slide her over? Like, can we slide her over? Jasani Beecham is hitting 379 right now, 4 home runs, 28 RBIs. Like, the fielding percentage has made a massive jump. They are now first in the ACC in fielding percentage and 10th nationally. So, you know, again, you look at the losses here, 22-4, and you've lost to Tennessee, Texas Tech, and Alabama. And, you know, you beat a couple of good teams. The UCLA team was a good team that you beat there. So, you know, this team, for, I know some of the losses that they took early, like the Alabama losses weren't very good. And so you're like, oh, man, it's kind of Lonnie lost a step or something like that. But, you know, now you're sitting here at 22-4, and you're going into ACC play. And, you know, you got Texas Tech coming up on the schedule again. I think with softball, you have the same conversation that you have with baseball. Like, yeah, man, you're smoking Florida Gulf Coast. You're smoking Coastal Carolina, and that's great. Now let's see it against some of the better teams, and you're going to get some of those in ACC play. So, but anyway, kudos to the ladies who are putting together a good season so far, man. It would be nice to see them get back into the Women's College World Series because, man, it's always fun to cheer for that softball team.
Oh, yeah.
But they're cooking right now, man. It's just, can the pitching take them far enough, right? Which has always been the question we had with baseball. Now it's more the offense. Softball team's got some bats, man. They are red hot at the plate. It's just, can the pitching carry them far enough?
Yeah. I mean, they won 10 straight, getting into ACC play. Usually around about this time is where they start to really kind of get their wheels under them, and now they're pitching, you know, and you got to remember too, a lot of these, I believe this is one of the younger teams that Lonnie has
Lot of freshmen. Yeah.
A lot of freshmen on that and a lot of freshman arms too. So I think as the season wears on, my hope is that they get, they, they start to understand how to use their pitches, how to use their rise ball, you know, how to use their fastball, where to locate. Obviously, Lonnie is one of the best pitching coaches in softball in the country. So she works specifically with the pitchers. So I know that I'm going to trust, because we've seen it over and over again. Like we talk about, you know, a little bit with Herb Hand there in the football side, but with Lonnie on the softball side, I'm going to trust that she's going to be able to get them up. But that's going to be their Achilles heel all season if they don't figure it out, is not the bats. I believe they can score with the best of them. It's really going to be the pitching. Can the pitching solve the issue there?
Yeah, I mean, you got Jazzy, but, you know, one person can only do so much. Unless it's Texas Tech, then they just let that girl throw literally every freaking inning. That's insane. I mean, hey, she got paid and she delivered, so can't be mad at that. But that's going to be it, guys. We just wanted to touch on all the sports that are in action right now. And unfortunately, we want to talk about baseball or basketball season potentially coming to an end. Hopefully, they get into a postseason tournament. Fingers crossed, because it would be nice to see that. Depending on when you're watching this, baseball does take on Wake Forest this weekend, Friday at 6 o'clock, Saturday at 4, Sunday at 3. Sunday will be on ACC Network, so you can watch that on your actual TV, not a streaming service, which will be nice for once. Also, you got softball, as we mentioned, in action this weekend against Syracuse. Football, practice number 3 in pads was today. So, again, we'll be keeping our ear to the ground on any new developments from the football program. But, man, shout out to Luke Laux and the basketball program. I know things didn't end the way we wanted in Charlotte, but, man, you took them to the wire, and we're just super proud of that basketball program. And so that's going to be it, guys. Again, I will ask you politely to hit that like and subscribe button, as it really does make a difference for us. I look at the analytics sometimes, and I think it's like 60% of our viewers are not subscribed. So maybe you're not subscribed, or maybe you're not subscribed and you think you are. Just double check, hit that button. Help us reach 3,000. It would really, really mean a lot to us. Rate and review on the podcast. Apple Podcasts is where most of you guys listen. 5-star review there would help us reach other Noles fans. We really do greatly appreciate and love our community of PTS friends and family here. Again, check out the website, plantthespear.com. We got a lot of articles up there for you guys. We're doing some new things with the website that are exciting. Some more features that are going to be rolling out for you guys very soon that we'll be able to let you in on before you know it. But with that being said, guys, we're going to call it here. We appreciate you tuning in. And as always, go Noles.
Go Noles.